The following is an interview with Jacob, who received international attention when he and a group of supporters unfurled a Free Tibet banner during the Olympic Games and was immediately deported from China for it. Here's that eight-minute interview. This is Mike Cannon. I'm with Jacob, who got kicked out of China. And I'm just wondering, Jacob, if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about that experience and why that had happened.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for having me. I went to China this summer with Students for Free Tibet. We went in the end of August during the Olympics in Beijing. And we went there to hold up a banner that said Free Tibet in English and Chinese to show the world and to show Chinese government to show them that people aren't ignoring what's going on in Tibet. In Tibet, in the last 6 months, there's been tons of people kicked out and rounded up so that there couldn't be any protests during the Olympics. The Olympics in China was their moment to show the world that that it's friendly to Western governments for investment and they have no problems. Tibet has been a huge problem in their image since it is a place where people are fighting for their liberation peacefully, but also also struggling sometimes hard. So China had to cover that up, and they couldn't let that issue dominate the their 3 weeks of glory and fame. So what groups like Students for Free Tibet did, or folks in Tibet themselves, or in India, or in Canada, or in San Francisco, just held banners and did protests all over the world. I was one out of seven groups in Beijing that did an action in August. Americans, Germans, British folks, and Tibetan exiles went to Beijing and held banners, opened up flags, ran through the streets, did a die-in, did a banner drop from polls. What our group did was on the night of August 19th, at about midnight, five of us who were staying in Beijing for about a week, we went to this place called the Olympic Park, which from the Olympic Park you could see the Bird's Nest, which was the national stadium, and the Cube, which was the national aquatic stadium, and also an Olympic Tower. We got there, and we had this 20-foot banner that said in LED lights, Free Tibet, in English and then also in Mandarin. We opened that banner, you know, for about 30 seconds, and it was pretty quiet park. We opened the banner, and within 30 seconds, there was about 10 undercover policemen who ripped it away from us and surrounded us. Fortunately, in those 30 seconds, there was a photo taken and video taken, and those people didn't get arrested. They got out, and within 2 hours, there was a photo and video up on the web. But we didn't know that happened. We didn't know there was a photo or a video taken. We sat there. We sat there talking to international press on the phone about why we did it, about, you know, no matter what happens to us, folks in Tibet are struggling way harder than we are, and, you know, we can take this. They surrounded us. They invited more and more cops to come over to us and just videotape us. They took our passports. They tried to listen to what we were saying in English. After about an hour and a half or 2 hours of just sitting there, they finally put us into a car, and they had like two or three cars following us. They took us to some empty building that wasn't a police station. It was just some kind of university building that wasn't used at night. And they took us there, and they interrogated us each individually about why we were there, who's our leader, are we getting paid for this? Who do we work for? Do we know what Tibet is? Don't we know that China has always owned Tibet? Don't we know that, like, we're stupid? And they basically, like, you know, tried to tell us how wrong we were. And they tried to get us to say who we were working for and whether or not we were working for the U.S. government. Because they thought the government might have sent us to disrupt China's image, because China's rising to power. But no, we said, no, we're not. We're just working here. And we're just fighting for Tibet to be free.
That sounds pretty amazing. That sounds paranoid. It's kind of interesting because all you hear is that America and China has this great relationship. Obviously, they have a pretty darn good economic one going on. So for some of my Central Wisconsin listeners, I'm just wondering if you can maybe just give a little bit of brief understanding to them exactly what is the Tibetan struggle.
So Tibet is an autonomous region in southwestern China. And it was a country for about 50 years in the first half of the 20th century, when a lot of countries were being born. And it had its own religious and ethnic population of Tibetans, and the religion is Tibetan Buddhism. It's very strong ancient history. And it actually, I mean, it wasn't a democracy. it was actually like a monarchy, but it was an independent country, and it was changing. In 1950, when Mao became president of People's Republic of China, they invaded Tibet because they saw Tibet as what they said a backwards country, and they had to modernize it. So they invaded with the military and destroyed tons of the monasteries because they thought monasteries were feudal, and anything feudal should be just destroyed, and they should be brought into the People's Republic. Now, as that happened, tons of Tibetans fled. The Dalai Lama went to exile in India. He set up a government in Dharamsala, India, from which to direct the people, or to direct an exile movement. From that time, there's been a struggle to free Tibet, and to do it in different ways. There was a guerrilla struggle for about 10 years, but that ended badly because China had a huge army. So since then, it's been a nonviolent struggle, and a lot of people have been supporting it because they see it as a continuation of a Gandhian struggle, because the Dalai Lama is really influenced by Gandhi's actions, and they try to do a lot of peaceful protests, large-scale demonstrations, self-immolation, to get the press out there about them. And for 50 years, the Dalai Lama hasn't been back, and the people are still being under the domination of Chinese rule. And they're starting to do population transfers of bringing Chinese nationals into Tibet to kind of to change the ethnic makeup of it, so that in 50 more years there won't be enough people to fight for it.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I heard about that. They just totally bring in a whole bunch of outside people that just totally waters down whatever populations they might have. This way, they'd have more political, but also it starts affecting them culturally too, as their indigenous people start getting less and less prominent in the culture. Jacob, do you have anything else you want to add about the issue you're struggling? How long did you stay before they kind of kicked you out of the country?
Well, we were there for a week, and then after we got arrested, we spent 12 hours in detention, and then they sent us on a plane directly home. They tried to get us to pay for it, but they couldn't find our money, so they had to pay for it. And yeah, they're pretty mad at us, but it was an interesting place, and I was shocked about how different it was than I expected it to be. It's very urban, modernized. I mean, beyond like urban space, like way more than New York City. The architecture there was out of control. It was like being in another land. I mean, I don't understand. But what I want people to take away from this is that there's lots of similarities to other national liberation struggles around the world, and I think with China's role rising in the world, and maybe it's a good thing that the U.S. is falling, but it occurs in a vacuum. China is like becoming the dominant leader, and it could be the country that guarantees the financial structure of the world. And if it does, there will be this powerful movement to question that structure. It is the internal opposition to that power, and if that's the case, then that movement should be supported, not just because it's a support for people's human rights and people's dignity, but it's a support that challenges the dominant order in China itself, which is hard to do from abroad. So I think it's really important to think about that internal opposition, which if there's none, then it'll be unquestioned.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it, Jacob. From the Glee Glee Studios, as always, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.